Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
As the violence of the Islamic State continues to make headlines around the world, a group of Australian religious leaders have responded with the Love for 100 Years campaign, calling on faith leaders to declare, "We'll love Muslims 100 years." We'll get to the group's intriguingly worded title in a few moments' time. But part of their statement reads, "The violence and values of extremists like ISIS are not representative of the vast majority of Muslim people in Australia, who are recognised better by their commitment to peace, community and mutual respect. The statement continues, "We celebrate the diversity of the Australian community and recognise the valuable contribution of people of Muslim faith to our culture and our community." Jared McKenna, pastor of West City Church of Christ and signatory to the Love for 100 Years campaign, joined us from Perth, and we commenced our discussion with the group's name.
Yeah, obviously some people will pick up straight away, Duane, that this is clearly a response to the Weekend Australian last weekend, which had the title, "We'll Fight Islam for 100 Years," which, as you can imagine, if they had a title that said, "We'll Fight Judaism for 100 Years or Christianity for 100 Years," people would rightly be outraged. In the same way that when the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda was killing and kidnapping people with Joseph Kony, we didn't say that that was Christianity. Associating our Muslim neighbours with ISIS is completely unfair. So Pentecostal and Charismatic and Baptist and Anglican church leaders, as well as friends of mine like Rabbi Zalman Castell in Sydney, together we stood up and said, "Hey, this isn't an okay way to talk about our neighbours and our friends, and that actually to love our neighbour is to call out what is untruth." And so that's where the title comes from.
So let's be honest, call a spade a spade. Within Christianity broadly, we all feel viscerally about injustices, but sometimes it's hard to corral a collective push. So how did that happen so quickly in this case?
Oh, I think part of it is a number of us have been working in this kind of space for a number of years. So the initiative started with Pastor Brad Chilcott, who's a Pentecostal pastor at Activate Church down in South Australia. And Brad picked up the phone to me and said, "We need to do something about this. This hurts our outreach. This hurts the community building that we're doing. We need to raise our voice." And so I got on the phone to a good mate of mine who was Young Australian of the Year last year, Akram Azimi. And Akram and I, we rang the Archbishop here in Perth and rang Rabbi Doivid from the main synagogue here in Perth for Orthodox Jews. And they came out with us in Perth, and similar actions happened in Sydney and Adelaide and elsewhere around the country.
The statement that I read in part a few moments ago is really clearly but very strongly worded. It feels like that you're being very active in providing a counterpoint to what frankly can be a tone in the conversation that says Muslim equals extremist.
That's right, and I think you hit it right on the head, Duane, that that's exactly what we're trying to do. Last year I was with Vincent Harding, who was a strategist and a mentor to Martin Luther King, and sadly Uncle Vincent has passed away now, but we were actually meeting at 16th Street Baptist Church, which famously in 1963 was bombed by the KKK. And what people clearly noted at the time is that this was a Christian church being bombed, and how horrific that was. What people didn't do was say, "Well, the KKK also claimed to be a Christian organization, so this is an issue of Christian terrorism." It was clearly politically motivated, and even though the KKK claim to be a Christian group, that isn't in fact what's going on. And yet what's forgotten in this conversation is that in northern Iraq, as well as the genocide of our Christian sisters and brothers that is happening, that we must be active and do and respond to, a huge number are actually Muslims that are dying at the hand of these extremist groups as well. And we need to together say that every life is precious, every life is made in the image of God, and that to alienate or scapegoat our neighbours in community, at first, it isn't actually truthful, and second, isn't isn't helpful and in no way actually witnesses to the Lordship of Christ. Our call to love God with all we got and love our neighbours as we love ourselves is really clear, and we have to do that with our Muslim neighbours.
As a church leader and pastor, you integrate and share your perspectives on faith with Muslims on a day-to-day basis. Tell me about that, because we interviewed Professor Barton earlier on from Monash, and he was saying that as a part of the community corporate, whether we be of the Muslim faith or otherwise, collectively we all need to step up and make sure that the disenfranchised don't get a chance to sign up with groups like ISIS, that there isn't space for this in their lives. So share with me your experiences in those kinds of relationships.
Yeah, that's what, right, Dwayne, and he's spot on that the reason why these extremist groups can recruit is because disenfranchised young people feel no sense of hope or identity, and what's offered through these false good news is a sense of who they are and purpose. And the importance of proclaiming the good news that we have is actually for people to find this hope. So for us, that looks like at First Home Project, we live with 17 recently arrived refugees. Now, one of the families that live with us are Christian, Pentecostals from the Congo. The other family are Shia Muslims from Afghanistan. But the call for us to respond to the stranger, knowing as the book of Hebrews puts it, that these people, in welcoming them, we might be welcoming angels. That's universal. There's no asterisks after love your neighbour. As much as some of us want to make excuses to say this doesn't apply to this person because they're different in this way, God doesn't give us that out. Jesus makes it really clear who's my neighbour includes our enemies. And so to proclaim the love of a God who loves us, even though we were enemies of God, it means we roll up our sleeves and we get busy loving everybody in community, particularly these young people who would otherwise be attracted to these forms of extremism. And so what I hope your listeners feel encouraged to do is actually share their faith, and share their faith in ways that actually reflect Jesus's love. And for those that aren't aware or aren't coming from a Christian perspective, realize that an authentic Christian response looks like Christ. So if it doesn't look like love, it should be left alone, because it isn't Christianity.
So what you're saying essentially, and I'm going to reframe here, but it's an important question to ask, is that Christian isn't the opposite of Muslim.
No, no. In fact, I don't love my Muslim neighbour despite my Christian faith. Dwayne, I love my Muslim neighbour because of my Christian faith, because that is how God has loved us. One of the most heartening messages from me actually came from another pastor in our nation who said, "I'm a convert from Islam, and what you have done around Australia today creates so much openness in my family, more so than any of the other things that they have done, because it actually allows them to be who they are and know that our interest is actually to love them, not merely to convert them. Let's let God be God and God do what God does, and our role is to witness to the love we've seen in Jesus."
Following that discussion with Pastor Jared McKenna, the conversation continued online through our Open House Radio Twitter feed, where Pastor Carl Faye, Senior Pastor of Gaimia Baptist Church and Director of Olive Tree Media, recommended we read a book authored by a former Muslim, now Christian, on the connection between the Quran, its commentaries, and their combined perspectives on violence. Comparisons were then made by others in the online conversation around militant Christian groups who use parts of the Bible to support some of their behaviours. Carl Faye joined us the following day on Open House to continue the conversation on air, where we started with where Jared McKenna left off the day before, the universal call to love one another.
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. Absolutely, I wouldn't be arguing against that. I mean, and in fact, one of the problems with a discussion like this is if you hold a view that seems to suggest a negative worldview on somebody else, you are seen as dismissing a whole group of people and vilifying a whole group of people, which is actually what seems to be happening across the nation at the moment. But the other side of that is it would be wrong to do that, and there's plenty of moderate Muslims who are as aghast at what they see across the world at the moment as we are. The concern I have, which was a response to the tweet that came out of Open House yesterday, was a kind of sweeping statement that seems to suggest that there is no connection at all with what IS is doing and the teachings of the Quran or the teachings of the Hadith or the teachings of Muhammad. And I'm just not so sure that that is actually a position that can be sustained, Dwayne. And that's really all I would want to say and have people to consider. I think that your statement that, you know, when we see, and this has happened many times over the last 2,000 years, where Christians have acted in the name of Jesus and they've acted violently. But you can't sustain a link between the person and teaching of Jesus who said, you know, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, with the actions teachings of Muhammad, who didn't act in that way. And that's not an opinion. That's kind of historical, my understanding of historical fact.
When you refer to that book, Seeking Allah, what was behind that recommendation? What's in this book that you're exhorting us to read?
Nabil Qureshi is actually grown up as his parents' background is Pakistani. He's grown up as a Pakistani Muslim, spending most of his time in America. And in America, basically came across a Christians that he started to interact with as he got to late high school and through his university years and into medicine and then finally into practicing medicine. And he was a very committed Muslim, very devout, saw himself as a Muslim evangelist. And this book, Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus, is actually Nabil going through the process of fighting hard against what Christians were saying, seeing his faith, his belief, his background as a peaceful religion, because that's all he's ever been taught, under the kind of challenge of Christians in his life, he then started to look more carefully at what the Quran said and what the Hadith said and what, and while it wasn't, this is like a 5-year journey that he writes in this book. He became a Christian, I think it was in 2007, so it's not a long time ago. And what he discovered was that all that he'd been taught over the years is not actually held up when he read the Quran and read the Hadith. And he basically discovered that the Muhammad he believed in, was committed to and believed was a completely peaceful individual who taught peace throughout all his life, didn't actually act like that. And that's not going into somebody else's history, reframing Muhammad. That is reading their own books, their own writings, their own holy religious books.
While neither of us, Carl, would promote ourselves as specialists in the Islamic faith in any way whatsoever.
Thank you for making that statement, Dwayne.
Certainly.
Much better.
Let me ask you this question, though. When it comes to the way we look from the outside in at texts like this, notwithstanding the book that you recommend we read, certainly it could be said that if you read some parts of the Old Testament, that it's a fairly bloodthirsty God that we serve.
Yeah, understand that and recognize that, and I guess what we're saying is that we're serving Jesus out of a New Testament God, and that Jesus taught quite different things. John Lennox is in town at the moment on our series Towards Belief. Actually, he said, you know, that his anger with those who have acted with violence in the name of Jesus, it's not that they were Christian, it's that the problem was that they weren't Christian enough. And even 2 weeks ago on Q&A, there was a discussion, because obviously this is ripe for material on Q&A. And
yeah.
2 weeks ago, Susan Levy, who's the Assistant Minister for Education in the Abbott government, actually made a statement on the show that says that Muslim and Islam is a religion of peace. And John Stackhouse, who was on the show with her, who has been teaching basically comparative religion for the last 25 years.
Who we had on Open House actually ourselves about a week ago.
Well, great man. I mean, you know, much, much deeper in knowledge than I am. But basically said, you know, graciously and gently said, but you can't actually make that statement because that's not its background and it's not its history.
So where do we go from here, Carl, in so much as we're called to love one another in an open and indulgent manner as people of faith, that there shouldn't be a criteria that would justify your love from me, whatever faith we hold to, whatever denomination we hold to? To what extent does dividing the conversation the way that we're doing today promote that? In so much as, are we offering a way out that says to people, well, yes, but bear in mind that some people don't deserve our love? How is this conversation not playing to that thinking?
Because I don't think anything that I'm suggesting today or John Stackhouse was suggesting on Q&A says that people don't deserve our love. All I would be encouraging people to do is to be accurate in the way they represent different worldviews. That's all. I agree with loving people. I have no problem with that. I agree with a multicultural nation. I agree with freedom of religion and freedom of expression and freedom of faith in our culture. That's paramount to what I believe. I think I would want to defend somebody's right to speak against the views that I hold. That's where we stand as a nation. But I think I'd also want to defend that if you're going to speak about something, let's be accurate in the way we represent it. There's a whole bunch of things that would be nice to believe about all sorts of things in the world, but they're not actually a fair representation. So that's the only piece. And I would just feel terrible if anything that I'm suggesting seems to say that, you know, you're not promoting love or that you're wanting to promote division. None of that's true. All I'm saying is let's be accurate in how we represent different worldviews.
And that there is a connection between the acts of ISIS, and it's not tangential but connected to a premise that is held up within both the commentary around the Quran and the Quran itself.
Yeah, well, Nabil would say that, you know, it's not hard to find for these imams who are calling for these people to fight for and with ISIS, that it's not hard to find places in Islamic teaching where that's actually talked about. And what's frightening, as you know, Duane, is that, you know, it seems that the people who were intimately involved or did the act of beheading James Foley, one was a rapper from an affluent suburb of London. Mm. Now, that's... we've got Australians that are, you know, I mean, obviously one of them is suffering from a mental disorder, but there's a young guy from Melbourne that's blown himself up. You know, he's grown up here, he's born here, but they are listening to their teachers. Now, there'll be those who will say that they're not teaching accurately, but unfortunately they're able to find places in these scriptures that represent that behaviour.
I couldn't let you go without referring to an observation made on the Twitter conversation that I referred to at the beginning of our time together, and that was the comparison between a Christian church and those individuals of the Westboro Church in the US that stand outside the funerals of past ex-service personnel with placards that carry some very offensive terminology, but they claim to be of the Baptist faith.
Yeah, now that's a worry, isn't it? Absolutely. I mean, the problem is, for any of us, do the actions of everybody that claim to represent our worldview therefore justified by us? And that's simply not the case. And it's simply not, you know, we're all appalled by their behaviour.
Yeah.
But they would stand up and say they're Christians. I mean, the interesting thing is they're loved by God even if we don't love their behaviour. The question really for me is always going back in this sort of discussion is, so what do the teachings of Jesus say, notwithstanding some of the difficult passages of the Old Testament? But what do the teachings of Jesus say, and is this sort of abhorrent behavior anywhere near what he taught or the way he behaved or the way he lived out his life? And you have to say there's a huge gap. The question is, in other faiths, is that gap as large?
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.